This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
Can you imagine going away to school as early as fourth grade, to a school where you learn to master choral singing, all the while being expected to hit the books hard? Well, today you'll meet the members of the American Boy Choir who've done just that. From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. We're at Richardson Auditorium on the campus of Princeton University, where we'll feature the American Boy Choir all show long and also hear two outstanding string players. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Here's our host, the great concert pianist, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thank you and welcome, everybody. The American Boy Choir School is located here in Princeton, New Jersey, and we're thrilled to be in Princeton to help celebrate the school's 75th anniversary as a part of a big gala weekend. The American Boy Choir is America's premier concert boys choir, springing from a tradition that goes back to the 15th century when boys added the soprano voice to church choirs. They've sung with the New York Philharmonic, the Philadelphia Orchestra, the Boston Symphony. A highlight of this season was a performance of Abonberg's Wozzeck with the Philharmonia Orchestra under Esa-Pekka Salonen. And they've shared the stage with a wide variety of artists, from Jesse Norman to Sir Paul McCartney to, wait a minute, Fernando, tell everyone about this one. You've performed with Beyoncé?
That is right. We were invited to sing at the 77th Academy Awards, and we had the joy of sharing the stage with Beyoncé. We also walked the red carpet. It was a great, great experience.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Litton Lodl Music Director of the American Boy Choir, Fernando Malvar Ruiz. Fernando, one of the truly distinctive things about the American Boy Choir, one of the things that makes this ensemble different from even the Vienna Boys Choir, is that you don't perform only music for treble voices. Tell us about that.
That is quite right. We have about half of the choir in this year, for example, are boys whose voices are evolving. They are going from trebles to being tenors and basses. And historically, they would be asked to leave the choir, but we don't do that anymore. And it's one of the characteristics of the American Boy Choir, and indeed is one of the things that makes the sound of the American Boy Choir so unique.
And we're about to hear boys as tenors and basses in this first piece. Tell us about it.
Yes, we will be performing Ubi Caritas, which is a motet setting by Durufle. Like most of Durufle's music is based on the Gregorian chant. This is a piece I've always wanted to perform with the boy choir, but I was just waiting to have the right basses that can sing a low E-flat. Indeed, this year we have such basses.
Where charity and love are, God is there. Ubi Caritas, in a setting by Maurice Durufle from his four motets on Gregorian themes.
Yeah.
Ubi Caritas in the setting of the Gregorian chant by Maurice Durufle, sung by the American Boy Choir under the direction of Fernando Malva Ruiz. My gosh, how you young men can come out here and just all of a sudden put us all into this heavenly place is just astonishing.
Thank you.
Beautiful performance. Thank you. Let's talk to three members of the American Boy Choir. With me at the mics are William Hwang, age 12. William is from Seoul, South Korea. Nathan West, 13, joins us from Brandon, Florida. And Evan Guidone, age 14. Evan hails from Floral Park, New York. Evan, at the ripe old age of 14, you're one of the older kids here at the American Boy Choir School, but boys come here as young as 9 years old. Do you all get homesick?
Yes, especially when you first come. Homesickness is a big issue. Especially for me, I was probably one of the most homesick boys, I would say. It was extremely hard for me to live away from home. But I had a brother there, so he helped me deal with the problems. And also, when you're surrounded by a bunch of other people who share the same interests as you, it just, you know, eventually you just get used to being away from home.
William, you're 12 and a long way from South Korea. How about you?
I also got homesick a lot when I first came here, but I had my cousin here who would cheer me up every time I got homesick. And eventually, it became that I almost had 50 other brothers in the school.
Very nice. So, Nathan, tell us about day-to-day life here. How much do you sing every day?
It really depends on the day. On Mondays and Wednesdays, we have a 45-minute rehearsal in the morning, and then two academic periods, and then later another two-hour rehearsal. And then on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we just have a two-hour rehearsal in the middle of the day.
Right. And you tour a lot. I know you just returned from your spring tour, and this fall you're going to a choral festival in William's home city of Seoul. Nathan, how does Maestro Malvar Ruiz decide who gets to go?
There are really three major factors in order to get into a tour. One, you have to get good grades. Two, you have to be really social with other people. And three, you have to make a contribution to the choir.
Well, there we are. We've talked about how much you rehearse and tour and how much you have to study, but you do have free time, at least a little at the end of the day. Evan, you haven't been playing video games. What have you been up to with your spare time?
Well, people come up with a lot of creative things to do. I just started a barbershop quartet with a couple of my friends, and that's been really fun. And we've actually performed in a lot of concerts on tour, and that's been really fun.
Very fun. Well, we've been speaking of the tenor and bass capabilities of the boy choir. Let's hear a little bit of your barbershop singing. While we've been talking, Jordan Smith, Adam Cromwell, and Peter Schoenkopf have come forward. What are you guys going to sing?
We're going to sing I Love to Hear That Old Barbershop Style.
I'll be the last guy hanging around to hear that old barbershop sound. That sound. I've never tried it, but I like to sing those barbershop chords when they ring. Sing me a song, any old kind, Rosie O'Grady or Sweet Adeline. I love to hear that old barbershop style. Love that style. Sing for a while, ballad or jazz. Sing it with feeling or razzmatazz. I love to hear that old barbershop style. Barbershop style. How those songs bring me back to my town. I tell you when those chords ring in the air. Oh boy, what a sound. Just give me a while, save me a place. Soon I'll be singing both tenor and bass. I love to hear that old barbershop style. Oh, what a style. You know that I love to hear that old barbershop style. Love that old barbershop style.
Einar Pedersen's I Love That Old Barbershop Style, a barbershop quartet made of members of the American Boy Choir. I want to thank William Huang, Nathan West, and Evan Guidone for speaking with me.
The boys in that barbershop quartet have such performance charisma. Check out a video of them at fromthetop.org. From the Top is made possible in part by the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, advancing the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. Now for an instrumental sorbet before our next chorus of boy choir. This young woman has been tearing up the competition circuit for young violinists. She won last year's Johansson International String Competition, this year's Blunt Slauson Young Artist Competition in Montgomery, Alabama, and today she becomes one of our Jack Kent Cook Young Artists. Please welcome, from Arlington Heights, Illinois, 16-year-old violinist Galia Kastner. Galia, congratulations, and so well-deserved. Tell everyone what you and I are going to perform together.
We will be performing Tchaikovsky's Waltz Scherzo. Thank you.
Alia Kastner, 16-year-old violinist from Arlington Heights, Illinois, performing Tchaikovsky's Waltz Scherzo. Alia, that had, I don't know, I was going to say equal parts of waltz and scherzo, but I think in your hands there's so much more quixotic playing. There's a little bit more scherzo. So much fun playing that with you.
Thank you.
Brilliant. You're such a confident, outgoing player. Does your outgoing musical personality carry over into other parts of your life?
Yes, it does. Being involved in the classical music world has definitely had a huge impact in the way I socialize with people. I am in public school, so I am exposed to everything. everything. but I am part of the Music Institute of Chicago's Academy, which is an elite program for the top students of the Music Institute of Chicago. So I learn a lot of theory, and I get master classes with people, and I do orchestra and chamber music, and I'm exposed to so much classical music and so much learning about music, and then I walk into school, and it's a totally different atmosphere. No one knows half of what I talk about when I'm at school. Like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm playing somewhere, and no one really understands what I'm saying. And but it's great, you know, I'm because of the music world, I'm able to stand and speak to people. It doesn't bother me to come and speak to anybody. I can talk about anything, almost anything. I can talk about music. I can talk about other kinds of music. I can talk about school. I'm very outgoing, and sometimes I'm really honest and blunt. But it's because I care.
Of course. I touted your competition wins before we played, but you say you're very careful about which competitions you enter and which ones you don't. What are the criteria in your judgment?
Well, the first thing that I always have to think about is money. Every competition is in different places, either in the U.S. or worldwide. I really have to decide, because if I drive there, it's gas. If I fly, it's plane ticket, and then there's, you know, rental car, and then the hotel for how many days you're there, and then, you know, the accompanist, and there's just so many different expenses involved, and it's really expensive in the end. So I have to say to myself, am I really ready? Am I going to make it to the finals? Am I going to win? So whenever I make a decision, I always have to make sure that I'm ready. One example would be when I was at the Johansson International Violin Competition, I just lost the Blount, like previously in January.
Last year.
And it was a total defeat for me. I was totally destroyed, and I just felt like everything was falling apart for me, and I wasn't sure if I was ready for Johansson. It was international. Blount was national. This is international for dealing with people from all over the world. And so my parents were like, oh, you know, I don't know if we should go. I don't think it's a good idea. The money's expensive, and I don't know if you're ready. And I was like, yeah, maybe you shouldn't. Well, for being the stupid people we are, we went anyways. And you know what? I really do believe in miracles, because I won. And I had no idea. And so I think that, you know, sometimes it's nice to take a risk, you know, because you never know what's going to happen. You know, it's different judges, different people, different competitors. But yeah, that was, money is definitely the biggest thing.
Definitely. So. Even with financial tensions, you've maintained a focus and equilibrium that anyone would envy. What would you say keeps you rooted and focused?
I think the one thing that really keeps me going is my faith. As a Roman Catholic, I do believe that God has given not just me, but all these wonderful people on that are going to be on this stage. I think he's given us wonderful talents that deserve to be shared. And I think that that's really important as being a recipient of this wonderful gift. We get to share this wonderful, universal kind of language that everyone can understand and everyone can do. And I think that that's really, really special. And, you know, at church one time, one of the priests told me, or told the whole congregation, music is three times the amount that a verbal prayer is. And I really believe that. Because sometimes when I'm in my room and there's this terrible passage that I can't get, and it's just awful, and I'm like frustrated, and I want to throw everything around the room because I'm just so angry, I always think that, okay, there's someone on the opposite side of the world that's dealing with cancer. There's someone that's suffering way more than I am. So what I do is I take that frustration that I have, and I want to lift it off of that person. I want that person to feel better, feel lifted. So I believe that when I do that kind of thing, I'm actually praying for them and having their spirits lifted. And, you know, I really do believe that that works.
That's a beautiful perspective. Galia, you're going to come back on stage later in the show to perform a violin obbligato with the American Boy Choir. We're really looking forward to that. And thanks again. That was fantastic, Tchaikovsky. Enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Galia Kastner, 16-year-old violinist from Arlington Heights, Illinois. We're in Princeton, New Jersey, celebrating the diamond anniversary of the American Boy Choir. And Fernando Malvar Ruiz, the music director of the choir, is back at the microphone. Fernando, tell us a little bit about your performance with Sir Paul McCartney.
Yes, it was about 7 years ago that we were invited to perform as part of the American premiere of Sir Paul McCartney's oratorio Ecce Cormeum. It was an unbelievable experience, and during the rehearsal, he called me over after hearing the voice, and I, of course, incredibly starstruck. And he called me over and said, I love the sound of the boys. Can they sing this part and this part and this part? He added like four or five parts.
Wanted to have more and more.
Right, that we had to learn that night because the performance was the next day. But it was all in all just an incredible experience.
That's so great. And so you have a song of McCartney's to perform next, one of the first songs he ever wrote at age 16. This is When I'm 64. The arrangement is by Deke Sharon.
I saw the age of 64 9 years ago. I graduated from the ninth grade of the American Boy Choir School in 1955. My name is Chet Douglas. I am Professor Emeritus at Harvard School of Public Health and Harvard School of Dental Medicine.
I'm Cameron Carpenter, the organist, and I attended the American Boy Choir School from 1993 to 1995, starting when I was 11 years old.
I'm Asher Wolfman, class of 2011. I was in the boy choir for 3 years, and now I'm in 10th grade at the Princeton High School. I've switched my focus to my violin playing, and I hope to one day go to a music school for that.
My favorite memories of the boy choir are all the recordings at ABC and NBC studios in the 1950s. And one of the most famous to this day is the live performances of Amahl and the Night Visitors, which occurred Christmas Eve live. And since Amahl and the Night Visitors is only 54 minutes long, the boy choir sang for 5 minutes at the end of the hour because Hallmark Hall of Fame agreed not to advertise.
The memories of mischief, the memories of drinking my first Orangina on the Champs-Élysées at age 11 in 1993 because I had managed to get to go to Europe for my for the first time with 30 boys and a probably ridiculously understaffed group of proctors and such, playing the organ at the cathedral in Riga, Latvia. It's part and parcel of the American Boy Choir experience that when you ask me to recall a particular memory, those of sublime music making and those of hilarious and incredible music making are literally too numerous to mention. So numerous, in fact, that they sort of just blend into an outrageously rich tapestry that is the backdrop of my whole set of memories from that time.
One of my favorite boy choir memories is probably performing at the American Choral Directors Association in Oklahoma City. It was my first year in the boy choir, and it was definitely the biggest performance I'd ever experienced, the biggest audience I'd ever seen. You know, getting out on that stage in front of everyone, you just feel this exhilaration that you've never experienced before. And, you know, when you're singing in front of that many people and you can feel that energy coming from the audience and from all of your colleagues on the stage, it's an amazing feeling.
Looking back, I can see now that I took away several important lessons. First of all, you learn a standard of excellence. If you can get in your head a standard of excellence in any field, it can translate into other fields so that you understand the homework it takes, the effort it takes, the commitment it takes to get to that standard of excellence.
There are many, many things that I took from my experience at the American Boy Choir that have shaped me as a person. One of them, and probably the fundamental thing as a school that they stand for, is the way that we treat others. The way that respect, not deference, but respect and really high-class manners are emphasized, are of daily use to me.
What I think I'll take with me is that sense of community that, you know, wherever you go, you want to be a part of a community like that where you can really feel like you're contributing to a larger cause and a larger idea.
If there's anything that has formed me as a musician and made me able to bring something to the organ, it's what I learned at the American Boy Choir, which is that all good music is important.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations, and from the Howard and Geraldine Pollinger Family Foundation, nurturing the development of talented emerging artists and sharing the joy that the performing arts bring to life. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music, online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need, on the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're at Richardson Auditorium on the campus of Princeton University in Princeton, New Jersey, celebrating the 75th anniversary of the American Boy Choir. Up next, a 17-year-old cellist performs Foray and then joins the choir to play continuo in selections from a Bach cantata. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music. Today's show is made possible in part by funds provided by the New Jersey State Council on the Arts and by the Board of Trustees, alumni, family, and friends of the American Boy Choir. Special thanks to WWFM and WRTI. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. The teenage cellist Joanne just mentioned, Julia Rosenbaum, is on stage with me now. Julia, tell everyone where you're from.
I'm from Potomac, Maryland.
And you've brought one of Gabriel Fauré's most beautiful compositions for us to play together. Tell everyone what it is and a little bit about it.
We will be performing Gabriel Fauré's Elegy. And this piece was orchestrated for Fauré's good cellist friend, Jules Loeb, when he passed away. And for me, this piece represents all the different stages of grief. At first, I feel some shock in the piece, and there's definitely a section of reflection, but overall it's just a beautiful representation of what mourning is for me. And this piece reminds me a lot about my aunt who passed away when I was 12, and she played the cello.
Thank you. Julia Rosenbaum, 17-year-old cellist from Potomac, Maryland, performing Foray's Elegy. Well, Julia, we'll have to retire that piece from the top now that you've completely given the definitive performance. That was just gorgeous.
Thank you.
Just beautiful. Julia, when we interviewed you before the show, there was one word you used 10 times. We counted. What was that word?
Passion.
Talking about
Michael. We've heard the passion in your cello playing, but you don't even have to play to feel passionate about your particular instrument. You just have to think of its name. Would you introduce us to your cello?
I named my cello Jacqueline Dupre. After one of my favorite cellists. My mom had me growing up listening to her music, and I just thought it would be appropriate because very passionate.
Very appropriate. Jacqueline Dupre was known for her emotional depth, her conviction, her
passion.
Green-eyed lady, passion's lady, dressed in love, she lives
for... Yikes, that's reaching. Okay, well, Julia, you may be on a first-name basis with your cello now, but when you first saw the cellos in a music store at a little girl, it was a bit rocky.
Yes, when I was about 4.5 years old, my mom took me to an instrument shop, and although she always loved the sound of a cello, when she pointed to one, I apparently started crying and didn't stop for a while until she eventually just put it in my hands, and I got the feel for it, and apparently I did not put it down for an hour, and even though it sounded horrible, I just kept on playing.
In other words, even as a small child, you merely had to lay your eyes on the cello, and you felt a rush of...
passion.
And then you love to take your cello to summer music camp. What is it about the camp scene that you like so much?
Well, it's fantastic to be surrounded by a bunch of kids who are passionate, who love the same thing as you love, and they love to make music. And it's really interesting because you usually get to a chance to explore a lot of different facets of music, like chamber music, orchestra, and of course get to hear wonderful concerts.
Yes. I know, I feel the same way. Kids at summer music camps share the same, not interests, that's not strong enough, not preoccupation, that's not it, that's too fussy, not obsession, that's too much. What's the word I'm looking for?
Passion.
Yes, much better than Sugarloaf. That's the opening of the St. John's Passion of J.S. Bach. Julia, you're also passionate about standing up for classical music. Talk about your advocacy.
Yes, well, when I was in middle school and seriously playing the cello, I often felt very shy about my instrument because a lot of the kids at school had different interests, be it sports or acting, and I always felt sort of alone in this. But now, as I'm in high school, I understand how important it is to get my musical voice out there and explain to my peers how, although classical music may not be the most accessible and it's a little bit more complex than your typical pop song, it can be a really beautiful thing if you have gained appreciation for it.
Well said, Julia. We love how passionate you are about everything in your life, and certainly that foray was an access into our hearts. That was a beautiful performance. Now you have to go get ready for the Bach coming up next. We'll look forward to that. Bravo again. Julia Rosenbaum, 17-year-old cellist from Potomac, Maryland. Now to follow that foray, we're going to hear another exquisitely beautiful piece of music sung by the American Boy Choir, with 16-year-old Galia Kastner playing violin obbligato, 17-year-old cellist Julia Rosenbaum, and Carrie Hyman, the choir's assistant music director, playing continuo, all conducted by Fernando Malvar Ruiz. Fernando, would you introduce the piece, please?
Yes, with pleasure. We are going to be singing the second and third movement from cantata number 4, Christ lag in Todesbanden, by Johann Sebastian Bach. And the relevance of this piece is a little bit of self-indulgence here. This was the very first piece that I conducted with the American Boy Choir 14 years ago. It is also a very beautiful piece of music. For example, at the end of the second movement, you'll hear one of the most beautiful hallelujahs, which is also one of the most melancholic.
A very early cantata, BWV 4, based on the hymn of the same name by Martin Luther. We'll hear two sections.
Thank you.
two sections from Priest Lodge in Todesbanden, Cantata BWV4 by Johann Sebastian Bach, performed by the American Boy Choir, with instrumentalist Dario Costner, 16 years old, violin, Julia Rosenbaum, 17-year-old cellist, and the fine continual organ playing of the choir's assistant music director, Terry Hyman. The Litton Lodal music director of the American Boy Choir, Fernando Malafala Ruiz, conducted. That was beautiful. Thank you, Fernando. By this time in the show, every parent listening wants their sons to attend the American Boy Choir School. How do boys get accepted?
I'm so glad you asked, because I think there will be, as you say, a lot of boys listening to this broadcast wondering, can I do this? Do I have what it takes to do this? And the answer most probably is yes. Because the one thing about the American Boy Choir is that we excel as a group. Throughout this show, all 200 and many broadcasts of this show, we had the opportunity to hear excellent individuals, outstanding individuals. At the American Boy Choir, we work on excellence as a whole group. And that means that we have different degrees of talent. You don't have to be Mozart to attend the American Boy Choir. You can sound like Mozart, or you can sound like an absolute genius, but that's because you work as a whole, as a group. And so, if there are boys listening to this broadcast that would like to be part of the American Boy Choir, all you have to do is come to our website, www.americanboychoir.org. And there will be a page to instruct you how to do an audition, which is an incredibly simple process. And this page will take you step by step, with videos included, of how to send us an MP3. And who knows, maybe 3 years from now, you'll be in this broadcast.
Very good. I know when you do concerts on tour, you also do auditions at those locations.
So that's correct.
Almost like, you know, the boys with their eyes bugged out wanting to be in the American Boy Choir can run away and join the circus. You know, I like that.
Sometimes we are like a circus.
Exactly. Well, for 75 years, this school and this choir have offered an amazing education to boys. May the tradition long continue. Fernando, thanks for inviting us to help celebrate this 75th anniversary.
Thank you for coming and celebrating with us.
But let's go out on a slightly more joyous note, shall we? You've got a rousing closing number for us.
Yes, it is a signature piece of the American Boy Choir. We have sung it for over 30 years. And this is an arrangement of John Philip Sousa's Stars and Stripes Forever. And the arrangement was written by John Kuzma, who is a predecessor of mine as music director of the American Boy Choir.
A rousing way to end our show today. I want to thank all of our great young performers and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, American Boy Choir, you can take it from the top.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Vagley and Tim Banker, with music producer Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Ouellette, with David Forbes and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. To download an application to appear in our program, visit fromthetop.org.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. From the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.